Funding for Think comes from SMU Graduate Liberal Studies programs.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. In a week, Texans will have chosen a new governor, lieutenant governor, and attorney general, along with a host of new or returning legislators. Big issues this year include border security, transportation planning and infrastructure, and funding for education. Both parties are working to get supporters out on or before Election Day, which for some might be complicated by the law requiring Texas voters to present photo ID in order to cast a ballot. So as we get down to the wire, we have invited two journalists who have been closely monitoring campaign activity around the state to offer some perspective on how it's going and how campaign strategies are playing out. Gromer Jeffers is a political columnist for the Dallas Morning News. Shelley Koffler is managing editor and senior reporter for KERA News. Election Day 2014 is next Tuesday, November 4th. Welcome, both of you, back to Think.
Thank you, Chris.
Great to be here, Chris.
So we say this every time. Republicans have held every statewide office since 1994. Any chance that this will be the year that that changes?
I don't really see it. I mean, it's an uphill battle for Wendy Davis and Democrats, including Letitia Van Der Pugh, who's running for lieutenant governor. It's one of those years. It's a midterm election. And you can see now, Shelley, the base, everybody's returning home, so to speak. And it just doesn't feel like there are enough new voters out there or the base is energized enough to offset, you know, this Republican juggernaut that we've seen for a couple of decades now.
Well, I think, like Gromer said, it would be a monumental task to overcome what you call the Republican juggernaut. But, you know, they've worked really hard, the Democrats have, on voter turnout. And you never say never, because there's never, you don't know until Election Day and all the votes are counted. But it will be difficult. I do think that the Democrats will do better than they did 4 years ago. And the Republicans are paying attention to that.
Yeah.
And so we'll just have to see how it all turns out.
Yeah, that's the big question. This will be a barometer. It's a measuring stick election. Will Wendy Davis do better than Bill White?
And I think she will.
Yeah. And if so, how much better? And what does that say about the future? You know, for this cycle, I think she had too much to do in terms of winning. She had to go after persuadable voters, get some Republicans to vote for her, and at the same time energize her base. Battleground Texas has only been here since 2013. It'll be interesting to see what kind of work they've done and how we assess their performance. But you're right. We'll see whether Texas will more likely become purple or blue in, you know, in two or three cycles, one or two cycles, or if it's way down the line.
You know, I personally don't like to say she can't do it, meaning Wendy Davis mm-hmm. or Letitia Van Der Pugh, because I don't like to prejudice voters as they're going to the polls.
Sure.
And so during this period, I look at all of these competitive races as competitive races, and I think voters, you know, need to assess the qualities and the you know, policy positions of these candidates and vote the way they think they should vote, and not be prejudiced by polls or prejudiced by reporters who say somebody can or cannot win.
You do have a clear contrast, I'll tell you that.
Absolutely. It's the parties and the candidates for those parties have done, in many cases, a good job, I think, of defining themselves and telling voters, here's your choice.
The only thing that the candidates seem to agree on, the major candidates, is that we should quit diverting oil and gas tax revenues from transportation infrastructure. Is that correct?
It's called Fund 6. It's the motor, the gasoline tax. You pay, I think it's 21 cents. We've paid the same amount for a long, long time, which is why we don't typically have enough. One of the reasons we don't have typically enough money to maintain and build new roads. And yes, they we're talking about Davis and Abbott and Van Der Pugh and Patrick, I think have all said we should not divert that money. But some of that money has paid for health care and some of it has paid for education. So when you decide that you need to dedicate that fund fully for transportation, you have holes in these other programs that have to be paid for somehow. So I think, you know, and Davis has talked about how she would do that. She had legislation the last time that would have talked about how you fill those gaps that you're now creating. But that's the real question. So it's easy to say we're not going to divert the money. It's harder to say, here's how I'm going to take care of you know, the vacuum and the lack of funding I've left for other major programs.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, both candidates are somewhat vague on how to pay for issues like education, infrastructure improvements, and all of that. No one wants to raise taxes, right? But yet, you know, it's difficult to find ways to pay for these programs outside of, you know, ticky-tack fees and that sort of thing.
Well, and it's easy for them to say, well, gee, we'll have $8.4 billion plus in the rainy day fund.
Right,
we'll have
right.
a little bit of surplus coming back. But that doesn't take care of everything on the wish lists that are out there.
Nor does it deal with the long-range problems. And you really
uh-huh.
need dedicated funding
of
sources.
Course.
So you say, okay, this is how we're going to pay for this from now until we have to find another way.
Can we pause for a second and talk about the rainy day fund? I think voters hear this term bandied about. They know there's this big pot of money, and then we sometimes don't get an explanation of when it can get dipped into, how it's replenished, that sort of thing. So just a quick little primer.
Well, the rainy day fund is funded through a gas on oil and is funded through a tax on oil and gas production. So when we have booming oil and gas production, as we do now, the rainy day fund typically gets larger. So the prediction is that we will have at least $8.4 billion in that fund, which is kind of a savings account that the state can go to take care of what typically are one-time costs. So if we have $8.4 billion in August of the next – when the next – well, they're thinking it would be to $8.4 billion next August, and that's what they're going to be looking at when the legislature goes back in January. I guess that's generally how it's funded.
Mm-hmm.
There, you'll see on the ballot something called Proposition 1. Proposition 1 would allow for some of that money, a percentage of that money, to come out of the fund or to be used before it ever goes into the fund for transportation. That's what Prop 1 is, taking some of what normally would be rainy day fund money and spending it for road maintenance and construction. So there's already one potential hit, if you will, on that fund. What else can I tell you? The legislature has said that they're going to set a floor on the fund, and this was very important. Mm-hmm. By that I mean they will not let it dip below a certain amount. So they have taken steps to make sure it never goes dry.
Yeah, you just look at it for the viewer, like your own household. You have a savings account or emergency fund, and it's at a certain level, and you know it's there. Well, the fear is if you start spending it or if you raid it all, then when you have
a true rainy day comes.
Exactly. It won't be there for you. And that's been Rick Perry's argument for years about.
A lot of Republicans argue the same.
Exactly. Dipping into the rainy day fund too much. So this was a big deal, the transportation proposition.
It is. And it looks like it has a very solid amount of support as we are voting now in early voting and as we vote on November 4th.
This has been really an unusual election season in that the arrival of the Ebola virus in Texas pushed politics pretty far out of the headlines, I think maybe in an unprecedented way for this close to Election Day. Is the effect of that on the political process? And I don't want to minimize the human consequence of the arrival of the Ebola virus in Texas. But does that create more problems for candidates that were trying to make up ground in the home stretch?
I think so. There's a rhythm to campaigns, and we know this. I mean, you get to the summer, and it's sort of slow somewhat, but you build toward Labor Day. Labor Day is the official kickoff. And then you have this rhythm and a lot of earned media, a lot of campaign coverage. And this time you had Ebola and other things that just knocked the race for governor and other campaign news off, you know, off the front pages. And it wasn't just Ebola, all the immigrant children crossing the border, you know, that stalled things for a time. And Ebola just right when candidates want voters to focus on the election, bam, they're focusing on something else. So I think it hurts. And when you look at Texas, I think there was a survey. Texas is climbed all the way to fourth worst in voter engagement people aren't paying really, most people aren't paying much attention anyway. And so when you have Ebola and situations like that, you really worry about low turnout.
I think the Ebola, well, I remember very well when we found out that Thomas Eric Duncan had been diagnosed, because it was the night we had our September 30th debate.
Yes.
And so,
right.
like moments,
you know,
before, right?
Right.
Yes, about 2 hours before the debate, we re-racked our questions to make sure we could ask candidates about how they would respond to this major issue. The reason this was really difficult, this was tragic for Wendy Davis, because she was starting to ramp up her attack on Abbott over the Texas Enterprise Fund, which had just been audited, and all of this information had come out about how the money had been misspent, and Abbott sits on the board. And, or I should say, yes, and Abbott oversees, as Attorney General, spending for state accounts. So she was ramping up her attack over the Texas Enterprise Fund and sort of amping up her ethics charges against him. That night, we did ask her, but after the 30th, Ebola was the headline, and I think her headlines that she had hoped to gain on the Enterprise Fund were minimized greatly.
Yeah.
So for her, that was tough.
The critical weeks before early voting, mm-hmm. really, in the focus was not on the governor's race. And I think even television commercials, because
sure.
you know, those commercials provide air cover for the ground game. And that's what's going on now. We have early voting. It's a knock and drag to the polls. But when you're knocking on doors, you want to be able to talk to voters who maybe they've seen a commercial or seen something on the news. That's not really happening to the degree that candidates want that to happen, because it's been all Ebola. It's been ISIS to some degree, and just other news.
I think what Cal Gilson from SMU, the political science professor we often talk to, but both he and Matt Wilson at SMU said that they both suggested that we may have, because of the Ebola preemption for election coverage, we may have historic low turnout in this midterm, that we may not have the turnout we had four yeah. years ago when Bill White ran against.
Right. Although in some places early voting has
been very high.
Right. And what we don't know, though, is that a matter of people naturally voting early,
mm-hmm.
or could it be the efforts of not just Greg Abbott, but Wendy Davis in battleground Texas? We'll see.
And mail-in ballots. There's some new laws. There are new rules affecting mail-in ballots, which make it easier to mail-in ballots. The mail-in voting has been up significantly across the state, especially in Harris County, somewhat here in Dallas County.
Yeah, and that's good news for Republicans, because Republicans, even though there's, when you talk about mail-in ballot corruption, they're always pointing a finger to Democrats, but Republicans vote more by mail than Democrats by a big margin.
Before we get a break here, Dallas County Judge Clay Jenkins has kind of been out in front of both the Ebola situation and also took a pretty active role in the immigrant children crossings.
Right.
Any effect on perceptions of him and on his standing going into the election?
Well, certainly his name recognition is probably higher than ever before. Ron Natinsky has tried to make an issue of both issues, immigrant children and Jenkins'
handling. They were mishandled.
Right, exactly. I don't know if that'll work, but certainly Jenkins is at his most popular point ever. We'll see if that helps him. It should. But he's not spending money, though. That's a concern for a lot of people.
We're speaking this hour with Grummer Jeffers of the Dallas Morning News and Shelley Koffler of KERA News about Election Day 2014, which is, of course, next Tuesday, November 4th. If you'd like to jump in on this conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Graduate Liberal Studies programs. Accepting applications for January to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in Global Studies, Creative Writing, and Organizational Dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. In advance of Election Day 2014, next Tuesday, November 4th, we are speaking with two experts in Texas politics. Shelley Koffler is managing editor and senior reporter for KERA News. Romer Jeffers is political columnist for the Dallas Morning News. If you'd like to be part of our conversation, call 1-800-933-5372. Email think at kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think. Gromer, before the break, you said that County Judge Jenkins is not spending a lot of campaign funds on this race. That is certainly not the issue for the gubernatorial or lieutenant gubernatorial candidates. They have money that they are spending on things like television ads. Let's listen here to some examples of how they're messaging these things. This is a Greg Abbott campaign ad from last month using press quotes to attack his opponent, Wendy Davis.
We have the potential for a very ugly fall race.
Yeah, we're not seeing much support for Wendy Davis.
This is a desperate attack.
The Davis campaign did leave gray areas in the information.
Also misleading. Not true.
Going negative now for Davis could be compared to throwing a Hail Mary pass in a football game.
At some point, she's going to have to introduce herself to voters.
I believe I heard Gromer Jeffers' voice in that
voice
ad.
The voice sounds familiar, yes.
Regardless of one's opinion about the candidate, pro or con, it's a pretty brilliant strategy. You know, politicians are constantly, disdaining the media, but occasionally, apparently, they find the media useful for defending their positions.
Yeah, especially when they take a little piece of what
a lot of the comments, not just this ad, but all of them are completely out of context.
Right.
Having been on the other side of that, right. I it's kind of frustrating for reporters.
But having said that, you're right. Unless Abbott, he raised, $45 million now in county? And so we
is that unprecedented? Is that the highest amount
ever? I don't
ever?
Think so.
No, I mean, Tony Sanchez. Over $60 million in that 2002 race where all kinds of consultants got rich, but able to have home additions and vacations.
Tony bought a few new houses
right,
and cars
exactly.
for people.
Right. But you see the funding, the money advantage for Abbott taken in play here. He has more ads up now in the stretch run than Davis, and that's how he's trying to close the deal. But, he's using that advantage.
Well, and I think in a state like Texas, we've said this for so long, there's not enough shoe leather to cover every corner of the state, and you have to get your message out using a media opportunity, free media. You know, if the stations are interviewing you and putting your views and your policy positions up, but then you have to be able to communicate via ads,
right.
And he can do that. Till the cows come home. She's limited.
Right, exactly.
Well, she does have ads out there. Let's listen to a Wendy Davis campaign ad launched October 13th.
A tree fell on Greg Abbott. He sued and got millions. Since then, he spent his career working against other victims. Abbott argued a woman whose leg was amputated was not disabled because she had an artificial limb. He ruled against a rape victim who sued a corporation for failing to do a background check on a sexual predator. He sided with a hospital that failed to stop a dangerous surgeon who paralyzed patients. Greg Abbott, he's not for you.
I think there may be some Wendy Davis fans that absolutely love that ad. A lot of people, though, a lot of more neutral observers have said it went too far. What do you all, how effective has it been?
I think that it was fairly effective for her. But once again, it came at a time when we were covering Ebola.
Mm-hmm.
The controversial part for people were on radio, but people who saw it know that it opens with a black and white grainy picture of a wheelchair to represent Greg Abbott's position. And Greg Abbott's taking the opportunity as a man who was injured when a tree fell on him to sue the parties, the homeowner and then also a tree consulting company. That picture, some people thought, was extremely inappropriate.
Yeah.
That it was that and so he really, he made some comments about it being inappropriate and how the disabled community didn't appreciate it. I think what she was looking for was exposure, something that would get coverage and keep her in the media on an issue that she thinks is important, and that is whether or not he was hypocritical in suing the homeowner and the tree company, but then taking positions on a variety of tort reform and decisions when he was on the Texas Supreme Court. I mean, it's kind of complicated to fit all this in a 30-second or a minute ad. I think this is a 30-second ad, right?
Right.
And, but she was hoping that it would get people talking about whether Greg Abbott, you know, had gotten the money that he, you know, had hoped to get and then, you know, prevented other people from doing the same.
Yeah, the substance of the ad, I don't think Abbott can quibble with, and we talked about this during debate prep
and
all of that. You know,
this was a question we had considered in our debate here at KERA, and we ended up not asking it because there were other things that were more timely that we needed to
the
get
enterprise
in.
Fund,
the enterprise fund, sure.
But I will say, and you, Chris, you mentioned neutral observers. I was in Kansas City, Missouri over the weekend. Go Royals, by the way. And people, you know, I used to work there, and they came up to me and said, wow, you know, what's going on in Texas? That Davis ad, is she desperate? I think you're right. Negative ads sort of suppress the other guy's vote in a sense. But the risk you run, is, especially with that wheelchair shot, it seems like it could be a desperate attempt, a last-minute attempt to turn things around. And sometimes voters can sense that.
I think it was a Hail Mary ad.
Yeah.
Because at this point, she needs attention. She needs people to focus on her and listen to her. And so maybe you don't like the ad. I mean, you don't like the visual there, but you might listen. And I think that's the chance. I think that's the, you know, the chance they took.
And again, it's fair game, the substance of
because
that.
Because he has campaigned in his wheelchair and talked about overcoming adversity, so... Yeah, I think a lot of pundits do believe it's fair game.
Yeah.
Wendy Davis, of course, is leaving open that Senate seat in District 10, and that has turned out to be a pretty contentious race.
Yeah, they.
Connie Burton is the Tea Party Republican,
and
Libby Willis
is
the Democrat.
Is the Democrat trying to hold
activist.
That, and she's trying to hold that seat. Is Wendy Davis's old seat.
For the Democratic
Party. Current seat, and she's trying to hold that seat for Democrats. It's important because of the dynamic in the Texas Senate now with Patrick, but potentially, if he wins, Lieutenant Governor, and all the hardline conservatives that will follow him to the Senate, including Huffines.
From here in Dallas,
who beat
John Corona.
And so this is a really hard-fought battle. Burton is a Tea Party activist. You know, we've talked to her many times, Shelley. She wanted Wendy Davis. She wanted to run against Wendy Davis. Of course, she didn't get that. And now, at this rate, they have no love lost for each other.
Well, Connie Burton was one of the lieutenants for Ted Cruz. She helped organize his social media and get out the vote campaign, the volunteer groups that got together and did the phone calling, put in thousands and thousands of dollars for Ted Cruz. She knows how to do that. And she believes, I think, that she has a very strong opportunity to win because of the kind of campaign she can put together among activist Tea Party types. On the other hand, Wendy Davis, I think, will bring out a lot of people in Fort Worth and Tarrant County because she's on the ballot running for governor, and those are Libby Willis voters.
Right. There are pros and cons, and you're absolutely right. The pro for Connie Burton is that this is a midterm election, and typically in midterm elections, the more enthusiastic voter is the Republican voters. Democrats, average Democrats, usually come out in presidential elections. But with Wendy Davis in Tarrant County and needing to get those numbers up in Tarrant County, and there's evidence that she is doing that, to what degree we'll see, that's an advantage for Libby Willis. And so that's why I think this is going to be a compelling, interesting race.
Mm.
You know, if Davis, you know, if she was not on the ballot, I would say Connie Burton easily. But
the only thing I would say about Libby Willis, in her community, Libby Willis is well known because she's been head of the homeowner associations group, the umbrella group for the homeowner associations for a very long time. So she has a lot of local community
contacts.
She's
from Fort Worth, right?
Correct.
And Burton is outside.
Is from Colleyville.
Right, which would be the first non-Fort Worth person to represent
that district.
And, awful long time, maybe since 1800
I don't know.
Or something.
Oh,
like
I don't
that.
Know. I just know that in recent history, yeah. they've always had a Fort Worth representative. Man. Yeah, so it's and again, you know, you were talking about distinct differences in candidates. Mm-hmm. These are candidates who come from completely different perspectives. And my sense is that education is a big deal in this race. How would you make sure that – how would you fund education? How would you approach school choice, that kind of an issue, which will be big in the Senate because Dan Patrick, if he becomes lieutenant governor, is very much in very much in favor of choice. And choice can mean something that other people would call vouchers. Mm-hmm. So the education community, the teachers groups, my sense is that they're very engaged in this.
Well, as we talk about the lieutenant governor's race, we do have two ads from those candidates. Here is Dan Patrick's ad in his campaign for lieutenant governor. It was released October 8th.
While ISIS terrorists threaten to cross our border and kill Americans, my opponent falsely attacks me to hide her failed record on illegal immigration. Here's the truth.
Letitia Vandepute opposed putting National Guard troops on the border, which send millions to Central American governments instead, and wrote the law giving in-state tuition to illegal immigrants.
National security begins with border security, and that begins with the Texas Rangers and National Guard. Washington's failed us. As Lieutenant Governor, border security will be my top priority.
All right. Grave concerns about what's going on at the border. Is this something top of mind for a lot of Texans in this race?
This ad is mildly surprising to me. It's a primary mm-hmm. election ad.
Meaning
right,
this
Charlie's,
is what, yes.
This is what an ad that rallies the Republican base, the hardcore Republican base, border security, you know, and all of that. I'm not saying it's not effective, but it's geared toward a certain segment of the electorate.
I think you're right. I think what he's trying to do with this ad is make sure that his very conservative Republican supporters, maybe his libertarian supporters, don't forget to come out and they go and vote. He's certainly not trying to appeal to the swing voters.
Or the middle. You know, usually
in
a general election, you may, if you're a Republican, start out on the far right, but try to move to the middle for the general election. Not all the way, but you know what I mean.
Sure. The people who are kind of thinking about, well, do I go this way or that way? Yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
And he talks certainly in the ad about ISIS crossing the borders. But, of course, border security also has an element of keeping out, you know, Mexicans crossing
right,
the borders.
Exactly.
It doesn't sound like Dan Patrick is interested in courting Latino Texans in the way that the Republican Party has consistently said it wishes to over the past decade or so.
Well, you know, he's kind of had a mixed message on that, I think, because he certainly has this perspective on the border. And historically, meaning several years ago or in the last few years, he's been he's made some statements that his opponent calls harsh about people coming across the border, bringing disease with them, you know, bringing elements into our state that would be would not be good for Texas. However, more recently, he has tried to modify in some of his public statements in the sense that he said, you know, this, I think the Hispanic community of Texas wants safety too. We want safe communities, and that's what border security is about. It keeps all of us safe, you know, regardless of your ethnicity. So I do think he means to reach out to that population. He said he's going to reach out to the Hispanic, Mexican-American communities, the Latino communities, and he has been visiting some. But his message is not, I don't think, always well-received by some of those groups.
Yeah, I don't know that you would hear this kind of ad in 2018, certainly not 2022, as the Hispanic vote grows in Texas. Just, you know, maybe the ISIS part of it, but not, I mean, Greg Abbott is mindful that the party, if it's going to grow, has to reach out to Hispanic mm-hmm. voters. Now, he's been criticized for his stand on in-state tuition for
undocumented
workers and
sure.
Children, I'm sorry, and that sort of thing. So I don't think they believe now that the Hispanic vote will be a factor in this election. So they have an eye on it. But when you hear an ad like that, you got to figure that they're like, okay, we don't have to worry about that segment of the electorate at this point.
He brings up two things besides ISIS here, the National Guard troop issue, which, of course, you know, in it's always more complicated than what you hear in an ad. He has supported the governor and the Republican leadership putting National Guard – actually, it's the governor putting National Guard troops on the border. The reason she's been critical is not that she doesn't want more so-called boots on the ground, but she has said National Guard troops cannot arrest.
Like they don't have jurisdiction.
They don't have jurisdiction. So if you're going to spend the money, her opinion is work with the local law enforcement team, bring in more state troopers, or amp up the local resources with that money so they can make arrests if that's what you're trying to do. So it's more complicated.
All right. Let's listen to a Leticia Vandeput ad for Lieutenant Governor out October 15th.
Now, I understand there's some people have a difference of opinion on rape or incest.
No, rape is always rape. But Dan Patrick would deny victims of rape any options at all, and he voted against funding to test the backlog of rape kits, allowing rapists to walk free. These are not minor differences. Dan Patrick is just too dangerous.
I'm Leticia Vandeput. We need to respect women and their families. As Lieutenant Governor, I'll fight for you.
A familiar theme, because mm-hmm. Wendy Davis has been hitting some of the same issues.
The rape and incest.
The rape and incest. That is a clear contrast between not just Wendy Davis and Greg Abbott, but also Dan Patrick. And what's important here is they're going after a segment of the electorate, again, the women voters. And Vandeput, Davis, they need women voters to win this election. So it's a smart ad.
I shouldn't cite polling if I can't remember the source, but right. There has been some evidence that even voters who traditionally oppose rape, or excuse me, would traditionally oppose abortion,
right.
would not necessarily oppose abortion if a young woman were raped or the victim of incest. Mm-hmm. And that's what she's trying to get across, because Dan Patrick has said that regardless of where a child starts, how a child is, you know,
conceived
mm-hmm. that child should, you know, be given the chance to have a life. So that's the difference on that one.
We're speaking this hour with political journalist Shelley Koffler of KERA News and Gromer Jeffers of the Dallas Morning News. Election Day 2014 is next Tuesday, November 4th. We'll resume the conversation in a couple of minutes, and you can join us at 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Graduate Liberal Studies programs. Accepting applications for January to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in Global Studies, Creative Writing, and Organizational Dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Shelley Koffler, managing editor and senior reporter for KERA News, and Gromer Jeffers, political columnist for the Dallas Morning News, about Election Day 2014, next Tuesday, November 4th. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. And let's go on the phone now to Judy Kay in Dallas. Hi, Judy Kay. Hello?
Yes, Chris.
Hi.
Yes, I have a good comment that y'all could comment on. It's Republicans, be careful what you wish for, because these two, Greg Abbott and Dan Patrick, are so extreme. And everybody's got their political opinions, and I understand, but when it gets down to it, I think they're just so far right. And just, I just can't see how we could be going so far right, but we've been doing it for 10 years. Thank you, Rick Perry.
Well, are these candidates considerably to the right of Rick Perry?
Yes, I think so.
I think on a number of issues, and we'll use the abortion issue as an example. Rick Perry does not oppose abortion for rape and incest, but Greg Abbott does. Dan Patrick, I think, is much more conservative, and you could say further to the right, if you will, than David Dewhurst, our current lieutenant governor.
Right. And Rick Perry doesn't oppose in-state tuition to undocumented children, but Abbott now suddenly does, and so does Patrick.
And Patrick said he would work to repeal it.
Repeal it. So those are a couple examples of how far to the right they are.
And school choice, I think, is another issue. Dan Patrick supports legislation. In fact, he sponsored it, and will bring it up again if he can. And that legislation would, we're going to get complex here again, but it would allow businesses who pay a margins tax into the state instead to pay that money into a fund that would provide vouchers for school children. So public school kids could go to private schools. It's the use of public money for private schools, which some people support. Right. But it's not something that has gained enough traction under a Rick Perry administration.
And if you look at the state Senate, Huffines, Don Huffines is to the right of John Corona. Who is replacing. And Hall to the right of Dr. Duell, who he's replacing. So the question is, are Texas voters now to the right of Rick Perry?
Well, and the other interesting part of this is if Joe Strauss continues to be the Speaker of the House, you have a more conservative, potentially, depending on who's elected, more conservative governor, more conservative lieutenant governor. Joe Strauss is a more moderate Republican, and he will become the person who will potentially be a backstop for certain issues.
Right.
Getting through the legislature.
And the Senate will be much more conservative than the House. How many times have you been able to say that?
Not too many, I don't think.
Yeah.
As you all talk to voters, people on the street, do they feel that the issues that they're concerned with are being addressed in this election? Are there things that people want to hear discussed more that simply aren't coming up in campaign rhetoric?
I went to a polling place the other day to work on a story about early voting. This is a polling place in Dallas that tends to vote more Republican, that part of town. But there were some people voting Democrat, too. And here were the things I heard. And something we haven't talked about is the Congress. A lot of Republicans who are not necessarily insiders plugged into the minutia of the races, they want a Republican Senate, U.S. Senate. So John Cornyn's opponent, David Alamilda, that hasn't gained a lot of traction. So I can't imagine that John Cornyn wouldn't be reelected. But what they see is the opportunity for the Senate because of other Senate races to go Republican. And so they're turning out in part for that. They care about the economy. They talked a lot about the economy.
Right.
The Democrats were really the ones I talked to anyway. And this is so anecdotal, but they were very focused on the governor's race and they want a change there. So yeah. I do think education came up a number of times in those conversations.
For me, it's the economy that keeps coming up. And I don't think Abbott or Davis has addressed it the way voters want them to address it. They don't talk about the economy a lot. Abbott doesn't in relation to keeping the momentum going in Texas. But they've been sort of vague with detailed plans about the jobs and the economy. But this is Texas and so on and so forth. Party identification tends to be the number one driver of folks to the polls. And I think that's still the case. And finally, you'll be surprised. Voters still don't really know a lot about these candidates.
About the candidates or about their positions?
Both. About, I mean, they know Greg Abbott. They know he's been a Texas Attorney General, but they don't know a lot about him. Still don't know a lot about Wendy Davis beyond her filibuster.
Does that frustrate you since you have dedicated your life to informing people about these things?
It does, but it's not surprising because I think the candidates encounter this, but it's true. I mean, yesterday I was out having a cocktail somewhere and just talking to folks about the election and they were still asking basic questions about who's on the ballot and what the positions are and that sort of thing. Maybe it's Ebola. We talked about the race being obscured by other things, and maybe it's
It's also because we have now for 20 years been a complete red state in terms of statewide elections. People who might want to look at something different, or people have just accepted that to a great extent, and so it reinforces previous votes, party line votes,
right.
And I think that until we have a more competitive state, people will, many of them, just not pay as close attention as they might otherwise. We don't have a lot of races that we have more local races that are toss-ups that would get people excited and interested and looking at comparisons. But when they feel like something's lopsided, they just tune out.
So John Corona's primary ouster has come up a couple of times, but typically incumbents have a much easier time staying in office than anybody who comes along to challenge them. What's the situation right now with the Dallas County DA's race?
It's tight.
It's tight. And Craig Watkins, the Democratic incumbent, he's been in office since 2006. He's in big trouble here. His rival, Susan Hawk, the former state district judge, is running a tough campaign. She's raised a lot of money. Watkins has not. But the reason Hawk is gaining traction is because Watkins has sort of alienated members of his own party, some Democrats, predominantly white Democrats, a couple of judges, Julia Hayes, African-American judges, Julia Hayes, Angela King. They're not fans of him. But also he lacks now the crossover appeal he had when he stormed into office in 2006. Remember, this guy was a national star because of his work to exonerate those wrongfully convicted. He was predicted to be the guy that would go places, maybe be the next Texas, not the next, but a Texas attorney general someday. That crossover appeal is gone now. So what we're having is a base fight. And if his base is fractured to the point where people deselect him when they're voting straight ticket, because that's still the message, vote straight ticket, then he'll be in big trouble. Chris, he won by 5,119 votes in 2010 against Danny Clancy. That's 1%, 50-49. If he was in trouble then, think about it now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he has been, in some cases, his own worst enemy. Yeah. Because he should, as a Democrat here in Dallas County, which votes Democrat, all the county seats, all the county posts are held by Democrats. He should be breezing through, and he's not. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with, as you said, he's alienated members of his own party down at the courthouse, and those people pay attention to judicial and court-related elections. He tried to run, I think, some of his friends, Democrats, against sitting Democrats.
Right.
That's really annoying to other members of his party.
To put it mildly. Yes.
Yes. And so, you know, they're just saying, hey, I'm not voting for him and I don't want you to vote. They are organizing their own Democratic friends against him. Mm-hmm. I mean, even some of the leaders within the county party have no love lost for him because he doesn't participate in party politics well.
And that's a great point. If you want to be the boss, you have to pay the cost to be the boss.
Of course.
Taking from B.B. King, you know, you do. And
that great political philosopher.
Exactly. And he hasn't done that. He a two-term incumbent, and he couldn't raise money. He had $55,000 on hand, according to the last finance reports. Hawk had $247,000. A two-term incumbent should not have that disadvantage in fundraising. And you're right, he doesn't participate with, you know, the county's coordinated effort like he should. Now he's going to have to. But if he was a better political leader for the party, then, yeah, you can run people in the primary, but you have the standing where, okay, but I'm also going to deliver in a general election. Now he's depending on folks like Wendy Davis, Clay Jenkins to some extent, and the coordinated Democratic Party effort that stresses straight ticket voting to pull him over the finish line. Midterm elections are always tough for Dallas County Democrats because there's still a lot of Republicans in his county. That's why it was close in 2010.
You know, one of the clear signs to me that he has trouble is that Wendy Davis has not come to Dallas and campaigned with Craig Watkins. She needs the African-American vote to support her. It's a base vote for the Democrats. She hasn't been out there stumping with Craig Watkins.
And she's in a tough position now because, quite frankly, she's going to have to think about doing that because if the base vote is down, if the African-American vote is down in Dallas County,
her vote's down.
Her vote's down. Bill White was 55% in Dallas County. He got 55% versus Rick Perry. She needs 57, 58 or better, 59.
More.
You know, if she can hit 59 or 60%, that helps her, but it also helps the down-ballot candidates. If she's stuck at 55 like Bill White, Craig Watkins is in trouble. And that means not just Craig Watkins, but other down-ballot judicial candidates and potentially Clay Jenkins.
Well, just the one other comment I would make about this race and its importance in Dallas County is the Republicans, this is their marquee race in Dallas County because they hold absolutely no countywide seats right now. If Susan Hawk were to win, they now have a Republican DA and they feel like this could be the beginning
a foothold.
Of Absolutely, of turning the tide so that the Republicans have a bigger presence in the Dallas County political system.
And that's why some Democrats are telling other Democrats who may not be a fan of Watkins,
don't let it happen.
Hold your nose, put it aside, do not let Hawk beat him, because if you do, then what you just said, Shelley, will take place. She will lead or potentially lead some sort of revival. You know, there's some Democrats who say, okay, Hawk wins, we'll come back and knock her out 4 years from now. You can't think like that if you're a Democrat.
Well, and I happened to speak to Wade Emmert, the Republican County Chair here in Dallas County, the other day, and we were talking about this specific race. We were talking about early voting, and one of the messages the Republicans are trying to get out, and you'll see obviously why, is that she would become the first woman DA in Dallas County. Obviously, as Wendy Davis pursues the women's vote for other reasons,
right. She,
you know, they're pursuing the women's vote because Susan Hawk's a woman.
Let me tell you something else about Susan Hawk, though. Have you seen her pose for pictures with Greg Abbott or
no.
Dan Patrick? Or
and she is a former Democrat, so
Ken,
you know there's
Patson,
a lot of
you know. That'll be a question for her. You know, do you support
the Republican
ticket?
All right, I have to jump in here because I do want to talk about the fact that the state of Texas, the Supreme Court has said that the law requiring photo ID can stand. Have we seen any patterns in early voting that would indicate that there will be a problem, there may not be a problem, or do the sorts of voters who might be turned away for lack of ID tend to show up on Election Day?
Probably Election Day, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we've used voter ID, voter ID photos, you know, requirements in the last few elections. We haven't had as many people turning out as we'll have for this election in November 4th. So I think the question is, you know, as you have more people coming and then questions that may come up at the polling places, is it going to slow down the process and create lines which then may, you know, prompt people to go home and just say, forget it.
And I don't know the current numbers or estimates on people without IDs who will be impacted by this law. In a close contest, though,
every vote counts. Sure.
Yeah.
So will you be carving up for November 4th, or how do you all prepare for the day?
Well, it's Election Day. Is really, there's anticipation. So I try to clear my head for a while and drive around to the polls, get a feel of what's going on. And then you prepare for the night, and then you just wait for the polls to come in. And what I miss about election night, though, is like being at home, having some snacks, and just watching the returns come in and listening to folks like Shelley. But we can't do that now. We have to work.
That's because you'll be on the air,
right,
too.
Exactly.
That's because you'll be on the air, too.
But what about
well,
you?
You know, what I always look at 7 o'clock, we get the early vote returns. And in counties, if you look at Tarrant County or Dallas County, you're going to see immediately how we're doing in the DA's race here,
right,
in Dallas County, how Libby Willis and Connie Burton are doing in Tarrant, because early voting can be more than, and probably will be more than, 50% of the total
and
vote.
And Republicans win early voting. Democrats win Election Day. You'll see the margin when early vote come out.
Chris is
all right. Gromer Jeffers is with the Dallas Morning News. Shelley Koffler with KERA News. Think is produced by Stephen Becker, engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. Help on the phones today from Christina Ulsh, and I am Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.